Richard, first of all, are you in Indianapolis right now? Is that where you guys are tonight?
I am. How do you know that?
I trust me. I've done a lot of research on you, man. Get ready.
yeah, we're playing tonight at White Lawn Amphitheater. Awesome amphitheater on the river. Super excited.
Yeah, that's cool, man. It's been a great tour for you guys, man. And I know that because I talked to Matt Nathanson about a week ago. Had just the best conversation ever with that dude. It's the first time I'd ever talked to him. Like, it's the first time I've ever talked to you today as well. And, man, what a good dude. Must be a blast to tour with that guy, huh?
You know, we've known Matt from, gosh, I want to say maybe the mid to early 2000s. You know, he was starting when we were starting. We crossed paths at different radio functions. And then we toured together, and we've become really great friends. You know, I think he's one of the only guys that we consistently keep in touch with, in this industry that we started with. And it's great to be touring again just because it's just like picking up where we left off, and catching up on our own personal lives and talking about music and talking about, you know, just, living this crazy life while having families. It's very hard to talk to anyone who's not doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I can't even imagine what that's like doing this and having a family and being a songwriter and being on the road for so long. So we'll get to all of that as we go through the interview. But I want to make sure I let everybody know again, it's September 7th that OAR and Matt Nathanson come to Mystic Lake, the amphitheater there in Prior Lake, Minnesota. You guys have been to Minneapolis so many times. I believe this is the first time you've played the Mystic Lake Amphitheater. I got to tell you, man, you're going to love it. It's big. It's beautiful. If it's a nice day in Minnesota, you guys are going to be counting your blessings. It's really beautiful there.
Awesome. We can't wait to play there. That's one of the places we were discussing the tour and routing that we were super excited to get there. So,
You guys also, by the way, this is a complete aside, but I don't know how you pronounce it for sure. Is it Ravinia? Had the festival in Chicago that you guys are playing?
Ravinia.
So I've got a buddy. I'm in a band. And my bass player and his wife go down to a lot of shows, and they're going down to see you guys down there. And they tried to describe this to me, but is it unlike any place else you guys play, where people just basically come and have a picnic and watch you guys play?
You know, there are some places that are like that, but at that size, you know, there's certain parts in the lawn where you can't even see the stage.
Hmm.
And there's just speakers back there that are, you know, a PA system that kind of extends back there. So some people are there to actually, you know, see the show from either inside the pavilion or at the top of the lawn where you can still see the stage. And some people are there just to enjoy the music with their families and friends and, you know, just to have it as something playing in the background while they enjoy a meal or their picnic or their wine. It's a really neat place, and it's a really cool neighborhood. It's one of our favorite places to play by far.
You guys have been on the road for so long and having success for so long playing. I mean, that's how you built the band, was being out on the road and playing. So I would guess that there are places still, though, where you look at the schedule and say, I can't wait to play there. Is Red Rocks one of those places?
Oh, absolutely. People ask all the time, like, what's your top three favorite venues? And consistently, I mean, you can't, you know, even if you're not going to see your favorite band or even a band, I mean, maybe you're not interested in, just to go there to see a show, it's just so amazing to be surrounded by mountains, listening to music while seeing the Denver skyline in the background. And it's incredible.
September 9th, you're at Red Rocks. So the tour continues on into the fall. Yep. And such like that. Richard, again, you know what, Richard, I hope I'm saying your last name right, man, because I've never spoken to you before. It's Richard Ahn, right?
It's so simple. Yeah, it's so simple.
Okay, good.
Can it actually be that simple?
Okay, good. I'm so glad. I didn't want to get it wrong, though, and embarrass myself. So thank you for that. I appreciate it.
You got it, man. You're good.
Richard, a couple of things. First of all, from a band's perspective, from a songwriter's perspective, and from somebody who's been in the band from the very first beginning of the band, how has the band changed, in your opinion?
Wow, good question. Complicated question. Let's see. I mean, I guess we could start like musically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, we're not playing the same way we were playing when we were 16.
Sure.
And that's, you know, that's a good thing. That's also sort of a bad thing, because you kind of forget the innocence of not knowing what you're doing at all. And then all of a sudden there's people telling you that you should do this, you should do that, you should sound like this, you should sound like that. And I think it's because we had no idea what we were doing in the beginning, that established a sound that was our sound. And, you know, I think as we've become better musicians and learned how to play our instruments, I mean, back then we really had no idea how to write a song. For me, how to play guitar, you know, just a couple chords. And, you know, that's why a lot of those early songs, we were, it's the same chords over and over again. No changes.
Sure.
Four chords. That's all we knew. And, you know, Mark, being the incredible lyricist that he is, was able to make stories out of four chords. And, you know, it's like country song. I mean, country songs, it was a Johnny Cash, Four Chords and the Truth.
Yeah, that's it.
I feel like he said that, right? Yeah. And that's basically what it was. As we've gotten older, we've learned to play our instruments better and kind of expand our songwriting and to, you know, more changes. And, you know, this sounds crazy, but, well, maybe we'll add a bridge, you know?
Right.
We're adding bridges. It sounds like there's a change here. It feels like it needs to have a turn in the song. You know, and I think we've learned to really perform live. You know, it's hard to do that not playing out, just sitting in Chris's basement, our drummer's basement. You know, as you play more and more shows, you figure out how to play live, not just in front of people, but also as a band.
Sure.
To keep the show going. And, you know, that's gone on to a much bigger scale than we were used to. And like you said, like we're playing Red Rocks. And how do you put on a show like that and keep everyone interested and engaged? So I think we've really learned how to play off each other to the best of our ability.
Well, and it's interesting, Richard.
The more we tour, it's going to happen some more. So we're talking close to 20 years of touring. Hmm. You know, that's how long we've been reading each other on stage.
Right. And it's interesting, Richard, because you almost never speak to somebody who has seen OAR in concert and not come away a fan. I said it earlier in the interview, but that's where you guys have earned your bones. Obviously, on the radio, but the live show has been where you guys have made your bones. And I think that's a fascinating, interesting, wonderful way to have become a successful band.
Well, you know, it's fortunate for us that regardless of the weather on the radio, you know, it's we have something that's outside of that, that's totally separate from that. Mm. And we don't necessarily have to depend on that to be able to not just make a living off this, but also to have people come out to our shows and play as a band live. So I think we're really fortunate in that, that we've learned how to do that, and we've built kind of this touring foundation that kind of moves with or without the radio, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Again, Richard Aun is my guest from OAR. He'll be out of Mystic Lake coming up here on the 7th of September with Matt Nathanson and his band OAR. Make sure you head on out. Tickets still available. Going to be a beautiful night out there, a great night for live music, and just what has turned out to be a wonderful amphitheater. Being a songwriter in a band for a very long time, you have your sound. You have your style of song. How often, if ever, and maybe it's impossible to do since you're one of the principal songwriters, but how often do you write a song that you say, good song, but that's not an OAR song?
Many times.
Really? No kidding.
Yeah, there's definitely a folder on my computer that is full of those songs. Demos that, I shouldn't say didn't make the cut, but they just wasn't right for what we were doing at that time. And that's happened, you know, over the course of however many studio records we have. I can't even count right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's when you write something, you're writing off of something that's, like, for me personally, like something hooky in my head, right?
Sure.
You know, a lot of times I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll literally hear something in my head and I'll go record it really quickly on my phone. And then I'll come back and revisit it in the morning and see if I can actually turn it into something. And a lot of times it's just like me like whispering because I'm trying not to like wake up anybody. But and I'm trying to transcribe the notes I'm humming. But you know, it's funny because OAR has such a diverse sound. When you've been a band for as long as we have, and your tastes change and your styles change and your influences change, you tend to write different things. But I think the most important thing is to have something that when you're releasing a live or a studio recording, that it's cohesive, that it flows, that there's a theme to everything. And not necessarily like one song has to flow right into the other and all the songs are telling the same story, but it just has to feel like a collection of songs that belong together. And sometimes that's not what you write.
Yeah.
You know, you save those and sometimes you try to revisit them and try to get them to fit. And a lot of times it just doesn't work because you're trying to force something. And those songs just exist on their own. Will they ever be used? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe if OAR Sound as a band kind of goes in that direction, then maybe some of those songs will fit. But it doesn't work that way all the time, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a fascinating thing, man, because I know, obviously, you always look at authors, and, you know, when their time is up, you see the unreleased things, and sometimes you hear the unreleased songs from an artist like Prince. They're going to release a bunch of songs he never released when he was alive. Are those songs that you would want released when you were gone, if you know what I mean, if that's not an odd question? I mean, are these songs that are hidden away because you don't want them heard?
No.
I think
every song you write, you know, if it's not good and you don't think it should be heard, then you don't work on it.
You don't save it. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You move on to the next thing. You know, there's songs that Mark and I have written together that we think are like just awesome. And we have like the best memories of leaving like the studio. You know, we wrote a couple songs with Jeff Trott, back in the mid-2000s, and I don't know why just talking about this takes me back there. And we have the best memories. We were hanging out at his house in Manhattan Beach, and he had a studio like right on the beach. We went out and wrote a song on the beach and came back, recorded it, and I remember leaving his studio in our rental car. We're just blasting the song, driving back to where we were staying, and that song never came to fruition. And it's still there. And every time we make a record, we always revisit. We're like, yo, this song. And it never makes the cut. So, you know, it just, you know, I would love for people to hear that song. It was a song that was tentatively called Nashville Girl. And we just never recorded it for whatever reason. So.
Interesting. Again, Rich Anon is my guest from OAR, coming to Mystic Lake here for the Amphitheater September 7th with the great Matt Nathanson as well. A couple more things, I'll let you go. Tell me, if you would, all the bands you've played with over the years, outside of OAR, what's the best band you've ever seen live?
Holy moly. Gosh. U2 blew my mind. And it wasn't even like old U2. This was, they were promoting All That You Can't Leave Behind.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
And a Beautiful Day was on that, right?
Elevation, I think.
That tour, I saw them at the Staples Center in LA. And, you know, I've been a U2 fan since I can remember just discovering them. And I'd never seen them live before. And that blew me away just because The Edge is like one of my major musical influences. And I love everything he plays. And I love the way that he approaches the guitar and songwriting. So I would have to say U2. Man, Pearl Jam blew me away when I was much younger. And they were a huge influence on us just for me wanting to just be in a band. I'm like, holy moly, that looks fun. And that's so powerful. I want to do that. Those guys, gosh, the first concert I ever saw was Fugazi.
No kidding.
And you know, they were local, they came out of Washington DC and they, you know, they were part of that kind of that hardcore scene. And I remember they put a free concert on every year. In I think like in eighth grade, Mark and I somehow convinced our parents that we would just take the Metro and go down to DC and watch this free show, which is insane. I don't know how they let us do that. But we did, and we ended up in a mosh pit, and my first ever mosh pit, and it was an experience. We were battered and bruised, but we walked out of there, or crawled out of there, literally crawled out of there, and watched the rest of the show from kind of the side, and we were just blown away the energy that translated from stage into the crowd, into this mosh pit, and that was really exciting. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, it's those moments, man, that change you, right? I mean, those are the things that shape who you want to be. And you and Mark, and I believe, is it Benj and Chris? The four of you guys have been together since high school. And what a great story, man. You guys go to Ohio State together. We know the story. I know it's been well reported, so I won't make you go through all that again. But here's my question I would have to you about Mark. At what point in your relationship with him, maybe really early in your relationship with him, did you know he had that thing that lead singers have?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty early on. It could have been the 8th grade talent show. This is before Benj was playing in the band. It was Mark, Chris, myself, and we had another bass player at the time. And that was kind of when I first met those guys. Was they wanted to put together a band for the 8th grade talent show. You know, everyone knew who played guitar, who played bass, who played drum.
Sure.
And just they happened to approach me, said, "Hey, do you want to start a band? 8th grade talent show. We're going to play some Pearl Jam songs." And I said, yes. So we played the show, and Mark... just, you know, I was so nervous. I was sitting in a chair. I couldn't even stand up. And he just loved to perform. It wasn't like he was, you know, arrogant or cocky. He sure. just went up there and he loved to perform, and it showed. And, you know, we all felt comfortable. I felt more comfortable being on stage with someone who was, you know, just feeling at ease too. You know, fast forward. Benj meets us, and we form OAR in 96, right? Juniors in high school, we start writing songs, and, you know, the stories that Mark was writing about and these characters and just how creative the whole thing was, you know, that's really what translated the music, and that was sort of the missing link. And so... you know, early on, I was just like, okay, well, obviously we have something special. Everyone contributes to what they do. But the lyrics and the story is, you know, ever so important than the music as well. So I had that hunch early on. And then as we continue to play bigger places, and, you know, it's just a natural born talent that you have, you know?
Yeah, really. There's no way to describe it, right? Some people got it when they walk into a room, and you can smell it. You can just feel it when they walk in a room.
There you go. And some people don't have it, but they still get up there and do it. And that's awesome too. And you know, maybe the show's a little awkward, but you know, there's guys like Matt. Matt's one of those guys. Matt's got it. Matt gets up there. I don't know if you've seen him live, but
yeah.
He is, he just owns the stage, and he is probably one of those entertaining guys I've ever watched, not just with the music, great songs, but just he is funny as hell, and he can make the crowd just laugh, cry. He's amazing.
Well, I've kept you for a long time, and I appreciate all of it. It's really nice to talk to you, Richard. I'm looking forward to the show again, Mystic Lake, September 7th with Matt Nathanson down at the amphitheater. But one last question for you, then I'll let you go. I've seen multiple pictures of you with a Telecaster and multiple pictures of you with a Strat. Which is your favorite guitar, and which would you rather play?
Wow. You know, people ask me all the time, why do you play a Strat and not like a Gibson or something? And, you know, we were broke when we started, obviously, like every band pretty much is. And a Mexican Strat cost $250 at the time.
Amen.
an Epiphone Les Paul cost close to $500 at the time. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to play Strat because that's what I can afford. And then that also kind of shaped the way that I played guitar and the sound of the band. If I played what a lot of those early songs, if I used a Les Paul live and played it, it would just sound terrible.
Hmm.
it would be just too big. And, you know, my style playing back then was really guided because of the sound of the Fender Stratocaster. So that is my, and I was playing a Strat for a long time just because I couldn't afford to buy any other guitars. Once I started being able to experiment and you know, add to my arsenal, Telecasters came into play. But for me, a Strat is the most comfortable thing. I could play the whole show in a Strat.
Yeah.
I don't, because there's some songs that I feel are, you know, better geared towards this guitar, that guitar. But if I had to, I could get by the whole show with just one guitar, one Strat.
Dude, when you can afford to buy whatever you want and play whatever you want, but you still play a Strat, that tells you something about the Strat. Man, it's been wonderful to talk to you, Richard. Thank you for your time, man. Looking forward to the show. And thank you for all the great music over the years, man. Really, truly appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for all the questions, man. Great interview. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, man. Take care.